very grateful to Libby for the invitation to speak with you this morning in the context of this worship service, but also after the service for any who are interested to get an update in the work that we do in Central Africa with people who are immensely impoverished and have high HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, and other infection rates. But I'd like to get right now into a brief sermon that was assigned as the gospel for the 4th of July by the Episcopal Church. And Libby very nicely said that I could use that text today. I'm interested in it mainly because it concludes, as you can see, with that one sentence that counts as a kind of stumbling block for so many people who rip it out of context. And it says, "Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And of course, everybody knows you can't be perfect, so it makes no sense. But in the context of the gospel for today, it's about being perfect in loving other people. And more pointedly, as Jesus says in that Matthew gospel, what credit of any special sort comes to you for loving only the people who love you? You ought to love also your enemies. And I'd like to unpack that word love just for a moment, because when Jesus spoke it, he was on the other side of the Romantic Revolution. We, on the other hand, are downstream from that. And so the word love has some tendency for us to have a romantic connotation. That's not what he meant. I think words that come more close to rendering his meaning, when he says, for instance, love the enemy, love people who hate you, has to do with being respectful towards, possibly even having some regard for. So that's the idea I'd like to fool with for just a little bit during this sermon. And I'd like to advert now to that wonderful phrase of the lawyers, "Since the memory of humankind runneth not to the contrary." And I've never known the meaning of that, but whatever I have of passive, I have an audience. So I can pretend that I know. But anyway, for a long, long, long time, I think it's fair to say people have not known exactly what to do with people not like them. And I think, furthermore, it's fair to say that when considering people not like us, either on an individual level or on a national level, which we are concerned about on 4th of July weekend, we might be all too inclined to regard them with suspicion, enmity, possibly vindictiveness. And Jesus is saying, sort of, all of that isn't the way that the Christian community is supposed to dispose itself toward others not like us. Predisposition that we have in consideration of individuals not like us or groups of people should be the opposite of that. And in that bad English translation, it ought to be loving, but I'm trying to say it ought to be respectful. And we ought to be possessed individually and corporately by some kind of regard for them. There are millions of stories that describe the good and bad consequences of either approach, but one that is in my mind just now that comes from the Learning Company is of Darius, the king of Persia, who fancied himself a great warrior. And he got tired at one point of the Scythians who were raiding the border areas of Persia. And he thought, I'll put a stop to this. So he got his soldiers together and tore off after the Scythians. And as he was catching up with them, not knowing anything about them, he was sent a message from the Scythians in the form of a diagram. And the sketch showed a bird, a frog, a mouse, and five arrows. And Darius, not knowing the Scythians, not knowing what to do with people not like him except attack, decided that this was a message of surrender. How convenient. And one of his advisors caught him as he was going out to leap on his horse and said, that's not what the message means. It means that unless we can fly like birds, hop over water like frogs, burrow into the ground like mice, they're going to fill us with arrows. I'm glad you like that story. And so we don't know what to do with people not like us. And now comes the gospel for today, in which Jesus says, be perfect like your Father is perfect, meaning love all the people, meaning have regard and respect for the rights, the entitlements, altogether the reality of other people. Approach them with that kind of disposition. It might be a foolish thing to do, but isn't there ample historical record that approaching them with the intent to kill is equally foolish and harmful? Why not give it a try? Maybe it is a reasonable thing to do. That's what Martin Luther, I'm sorry, I get Martin Luther and Abraham Lincoln mixed up. That's what Abraham Lincoln counseled when he said, the only way to lose an enemy is to make a friend. And the same point was underlined by Mahatma Gandhi, who said, apropos of the cycle of vengeance, an eye for an eye, and the whole world goes blind. I'd like to illustrate the foil to all this. Sally, my wife, Judy, now her sister, and I were in the Middle East in 1990. That was my first term as a member of the Episcopal Church's National Standing Commission on Peace. It was a wonderful experience. And the Archbishop, Anglican Archbishop of Jerusalem and the Middle East, invited us in there. We were there for 3 weeks. The American Jewish Committee did our itinerary for half that time, and the Middle East Council of Churches, at least informally, representing the interests of the Palestine Liberation Organization, did the other half of our itinerary. And the high point of that trip, or the low, was the day we were inside the Jabalia refugee camp. This is where the first intifada erupted that year. And it was going strong while we were there. And we were standing in front of the Ali Arab Hospital. The people who were guiding us took us into the hospital through the emergency department and started showing us things that they were victimized by, they said. And one of those was a tear gas canister that they said was lobbed into that emergency department by the Israeli army. You never know who's telling the truth or how much, but there was this tear gas canister anyway. And I noticed, by the way, that printed on the side of the canister was made in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We got inside the hospital, and outside was just lots and lots of noise. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children out there. And then all of a sudden, in the most eerie fashion, there was dead silence. And we knew something was up. And as we raced out, all of those kids had vanished. And I looked down the street to the left, and there, of course, was the Israeli Army outpost, surrounded by coils and coils of barbed wire. There was a tall place where a sentry was stationed, pointing an automatic rifle right at the hospital. And down this dirt road, with open sewers, by the way, gradually you could hear the approach of a speeding Israeli Army Jeep. And when the Jeep got close to the hospital, all these kids appeared again. And threw, it seemed, every stone in the world at the guy driving that Jeep, which had no effect on him because he was in a well-constructed cage. And he raced into the Army compound and was okay. But we were hustled onto the bus that had brought us there because, as our guide said, the Army will be here in less than 5 minutes with tear gas. One other thing I want to tell you about that trip much more briefly is that a few days later we were in East Jerusalem, the Arab quarter, and we came upon two little kids engaged in a vicious fight. I've never seen a fight like that. And then a bigger kid came up to them and separated them and said something to them in Arabic, which our guide interpreted as saying, he told them, save it for the Jews. And thus the enmity, the retaliation, the suspicion, the hatred goes on to the next generation. The consequence of all this, the so what of it, is that that place, Israel, and the occupied territories are a cockpit of vindictiveness and the reflex to fight and destroy. And it goes nowhere. It goes nowhere. So I'd like to end my little rant by saying maybe Jesus was not so unrealistic after all to propose that we possess ourselves with some kind of regard, a new approach to people not like us, that is respectful of them and sincerely interested in wanting to know them and, if possible, honor them. There was a Lutheran pastor, this is the very end of it, at the Priester Barracks at Dachau. And there were a number of pastors incarcerated there. And he said to people who he led on tours through there, at the end, he said, it is worth taking risks, betting on love, betting on respect. Where there is no risk, there is no commitment. Where there is no commitment, there is no witness. Where there is no witness, there is no hope. And where there is no hope, there is no gospel. And it just might save the world.
Let us stand and affirm our faith in the words of the Nicene Creed.
We believe in one God.